Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This week on Dr. Drew After Dark, this is how pharmaceutical research works. From the moment you pull a molecule off the shelf and identify it, you have 10 years to bring it to market and profit, and then you lose the patent.
Why did you think we would like that call?
Yeah. Also, I really hope we just assisted with only a book.
Right.
Maybe tracing else.
That call.
You guys like macabre, but it went a little more macabre than I expected.
Welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Please be advised that Dr. Drew After Dark may contain sexually oriented content and be unsuitable for young children.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Phone number 818-253-1693. The email is drdrewafterdark@gmail.com. Everybody, it's me and the Booth Boys, gentlemen, ladies. What's going on in there?
Yo,
what's up, man?
Hello.
Look, Heather in the house. Heather, is this your first time on this, yes?
In the booth for this show, yeah. Usually, not today, pal.
Weren't you in the booth when we were in Annie's house and you were talking about...
my tumor. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Wasn't that like one of your first days?
That was like my first day, and Drew, you were like, hey, like, you should come on the show. And so I talked about the tumor that I had removed from my spine.
I don't remember talking about that. But tell us again really quickly.
Yeah, so I had a teratoma that was on my tailbone,
and they didn't know
until they took it out.
Yes.
But
so
it was pretty...
I think we grossed everybody out with descriptions of what a teratoma is, right?
Yes, because it has skin cells, teeth cells, hair cells, all kinds of stuff.
Think about it, guys. She was growing a monster in her tail. That's teratoma. Teratology is monstrous. It means a monster. And so it's literally teratoma.
I named it Winnie.
Why?
Too close.
Why?
Just because I wanted to call it something. I was like, get out of me, dude.
Wanted to call it something. Well, find ones with, you'll see them with like eyeballs and teeth. And no, keep going down. Let's see here. Keep going. Hair. Oh, there's a good one on the second one. Yeah, that looks kind of like some nasty shit in there. Yeah, any tissue can grow in a teratoma. It's a monster. Look at that. A scalp. What teeth? Look at that. Fully formed teeth. Yeah, the biology is awesome. And so were you having pain or something?
Yeah, I started having pain and then noticed that there was a bump back there that was probably growing for a really long time. And then they removed it, but I'm still like dealing with all kinds of chronic pain after that.
Oh,
pain
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But we figured it out, got a medication that helps with my nerve pain. And
what is that, like gabapentin or something?
No, it's a nortriptyline.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So that's been my
help
big
you sleep
fix.
Too.
Mm-hmm.
Dry mouth?
Yeah.
Nasty. It's an old fashioned tricyclic antidepressant, but has lots of other properties. Wouldn't it have been cool though if during Potter's little surgery I did, if I sort of found a teratoma in there? It would make sense, wouldn't it?
Cool.
It would.
I don't know if I'd
not
call
cool.
It cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Does that stuff give you the creeps at all?
Monsters in your
yeah.
ass?
Yeah. That.
A little bit. Yeah. It's a little concerning. Yeah. It's a little. Yeah.
It's going to.
It's bizarre.
It's adjacent to your area of concern. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know that's an area that you have energy with. Hmm?
They look like Cronenberg creatures.
Yeah.
They're wild.
Crazy. All right, let's do a little bit of email. We got some voice. We got some phone calls coming in. I'm going to get right to those calls. Guys, hang in. I'll be right with you. I just want to do a couple emails first. Here we are. I have an irregular corpus cavernosum issue, okay? Give me a penis in cross-section. One side is twice as big as the other. The smallest side has a bend about halfway up the penis. Also, I pressed into my pelvis at the base of the penis. Feels like a kink in the hose. Just curious if I'm in an area that pushes surgery. And the information I find online is a bit all over the place, mostly pointing to enhancing size over correcting as issue. Okay. So that second one from the top there. There we are. The red, the little spongy things in the middle there, that's the corpus cavernosum. That's what swells up during an erection, right? And he's saying that one side is shorter than the other. I would be, it's possible, but I wouldn't be surprised if what actually is happening, you just have a contraction of the sheath around one of them, which is Peyronie's. You get a contraction that pulls it over to one side. And that kind of Peyronie's sometimes needs surgery. What they're also suggesting, what you're reading about, is putting a extender in one side, you know, that you can inflate when you get erections, which is another possibility. But if it's Peyronie's, that would cause pain. So you got to see a urologist about this who does this sort of thing. I had to bring in, there's a urologist I work with, a female urologist that does a lot of implants and stuff. We had to might bring her in there. It might be interesting. I think, yeah, Ashley Tapscott is her name. Look her up there. And she's very entertaining. Yeah, Ashley Tapscott, yep. There she is. That's Ashley. And she spends all day putting in penis implants. That's who does all day. Yeah, I've talked to her a couple times on my streaming show. All right, so good. There we go. Email, one more before we go. Pregnancy poundings. My wife is 32, 30 weeks pregnant. Cervix shortened and had to get a cerclage. Gentlemen, cerclage, please. He spelled it very, I'm not sure if he spelled it right. I think it's C-I-R. Yeah, I think it is cerclage. There it is. See what's going on there? They sew the cervix. They kind of sew the baby in by closing the cervical os with some sutures, essentially, or wires. Let's see. The cerclage put in at 21 weeks to keep the baby from coming out. My wife got me a pocket pussy to hold me down. it's your mom's house. It's not the same. My question is, will we cause damage if I penetrate a few inches into the V, but stopping before she orgasms? What are the effects of having sex while having a cerclage? You know, I don't know. It's an interesting question. I'm sort of pissed that your obstetrician didn't say don't have sex if you're not supposed to have sex. For the most part, you can have sex all the way through a pregnancy, all the way in the third trimester, no problem. But I don't think it would be a problem, but you got to talk to your obstetrician about that. All right, I'm going to talk to Amanda here. Amanda, what's going on?
Hey, Dr. Drew, I had a quick question.
Yeah.
So in April of 2020, I had my son. The delivery went normal, but I was in intense pain afterwards.
Where?
It was so intense, where? I couldn't walk.
Where was the pain? Months. Pelvic pain?
In my pubic bone.
Pubic bone. Okay. Like, was it like a pressure or stabbing or sharp? How would you describe it?
Stabbing.
Pain.
Constant stab.
Okay.
The pain continued for about 2 years.
Wow.
And no doctor could tell me exactly why.
Wow.
Then the pain subsided after the 2 years, and I got pregnant with my daughter in July of 22. I didn't feel any pain throughout my pregnancy until I was about 5 months pregnant. The pain was back, and it was the same pain I had felt in the past. My OBGYN then sent me to an orthopedic surgeon who took an x-ray at me of about 35 weeks pregnant, I think.
Wow.
And told me I had a separation of my pubic bone.
That's what it sounded like to me. Yep. Wow. And see, the reason the symptoms kind of go away is when you're pregnant, you get this hormone called relaxin. And so that separation kind of relaxes a little bit, but then it starts to separate more when the baby gets big. Oh, boy. Okay.
So after I guess they told me I had a separation, I delivered her in April, and the delivery was extremely painful.
Oh, my God, yes.
The epidural didn't take away bone pain.
Oh, I'm amazed they didn't do a C-section on you. Did you refuse a C-section or something?
They said it would make it worse.
Okay, I don't see how,
but I had her naturally.
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually still in a considerable amount of pain now.
Yeah.
She's 4 months now.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of stuck because do I not have any more kids, you know, because this is going to happen again, or do I wait longer in between? Maybe if I wait a couple more years,
wow, Amanda, it's not such a quick question. It's not an easy question either. It's sort of philosophical, right? Because it is going to happen again. The question is, how much are you willing to go through? And what I would also, I am certainly no expert in pubic, you know, the give me a pelvic bone, just pelvic bone up there. And the, you know, I think everyone knows where the pubic bone is, but there's a connector there. Yeah. Just any of those are fine. Yeah. You see the, where the sort of rings come together there, that's the pubic bone, and there's a, right, and there's a joint there essentially, and that can separate. It's kind of unusual, but I and it should kind of heal on its own. The pelvis does tend to heal on its own. I here's what I would do. I would go back to the orthopedist and establish this question. If I keep doing pregnancies, which I know are going to be painful again, am I going to do permanent damage, and could I end up with a permanent problem here? Because that you don't want to do. Okay? Okay. You got to talk to that orthopedist. How are the babies?
Yeah, the babies are healthy. The babies are healthy. It's just I have a hard time keeping up with them, unfortunately.
Well, isn't two enough
with my
then?
My son, when I was pregnant.
Isn't two enough? You got to have more?
Oh, I wanted six.
That's oh, my God. Well, you may want six, but God may have had other plans for you. And by the way, they, as they always say, he gives you what you can what you can take. And maybe this is it. Maybe he's telling you something.
Amen.
But I would go back. And three is, I had three. Three is a lot, man. It gets a lot different at three. At four, five, and six, you can start to use the kids to help with the other kids. But I'm just saying. So again, get back to the orthopedist, find out if this is going to be permanent damage, find out if there's any treatment you can initiate that might reduce the risks of what happens during pregnancy. But I'm suspicious they're going to, here's what I suspect they're going to tell you. What I suspect they're going to tell you is, yeah, it's going to get worse. Yeah, it's going to hurt. Could do permanent damage. They're going to go, oh, we don't know for sure, but you could be in pain the rest of your life. That's what they're going to, say something like that, I bet. All right.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. Thank you so much.
I bet. But don't take my word for it. Go make sure that they actually go and have proper consultation, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right, Amanda. Good luck. That's an interesting. I love these ones where they're not stuff I've seen or used to hearing about. Whoops. I'm going to get Ben up there. Ben, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Dr. Drew. How's it going?
We're good. What's happening?
Well, I had a question about my white. My wife and I have been trying to get pregnant for about a year and a half, with no success. My urologist.
Mm-hmm.
And, he sent me to have a semen analysis done, and it came back that I was pretty much very low on every metric.
Mm.
I just wanted to see, get a baseline from you. If we did nothing at this point, like, what are the chances of us getting pregnant naturally?
You have to ask, are you seeing a fertility specialist?
I started to.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten the initial appointment yet.
Okay. So you need to do that. I don't know exactly what the thresholds are. There's a certain number that if you drop below, I think is it a million? I forget what the number is, but there's a number if you drop below, the risk, the probability of pregnancy goes way down. And then if you also have motility issues or capacitation issues on top of that, then you're sort of in difficult territory. The real question is why? Why is this happening? Did they do any evaluation?
The only thing they've done is the semen analysis so far. And the normal range they gave me was 15 million per milliliter, and I'm at 8.2.
Mm.
And the motility, the normal range was 40%. I'm at 13%.
Yeah. So there's still
the forward progression motility was,
it seems to me,
supposed to be like 32%.
I don't spend my day evaluating these numbers, but it seems to me like there should still be some probability of pregnancy. It's just, you need to enhance that probability. But what's going on? Did they check a testosterone level for you?
I think that's probably the next step. The issue is my insurance doesn't cover infertility treatment.
Yeah, but that's a medical thing, dude. That's
varicoceles on the left side.
Yeah, and that's another thing. If you have varicoceles or cystoceles, they can take those out. That can help enhance sperm production or sperm delivery, at least. Measuring your testosterone is a medical question. That's not fertility. That has to be answered medically. Why do you have, if you have low testosterone, why do you have low testosterone? I will tell you the most common reason for all of this is medication and substances. So are you drinking a lot? Are you smoking a lot of weed? Are you on any medication?
I'm not on any medication. I don't do drugs, never done drugs. I drink maybe once every 2 weeks or so.
All right. Well, that's not it then. So this needs to be explained. That needs to be explained. There's still a probability of pregnancy, it seems to me, based on these numbers. Again, no expert here on that. But when you go to the fertility specialist, it's going to be all out of pocket. Is that correct?
It seems to be that way.
Yeah. So tell them right away, look, we want to kind of go easy here. Are there things we can do that aren't going to cost a lot of money? Make that clear to them up front.
Cause, right.
Because you can get into really nasty expenses so quickly with fertility treatments. It's a really kind of a pain.
Yeah. And they gave me a list of vitamins to start taking.
Good.
So I'm going to do that and see maybe if that helps. But,
good. Let your balls dangle a little bit more, right? Helps to make the white if you don't use the tidy whities.
I thought I was.
All right. All right. Good. All right, my friend. Thanks for the call. Really interesting. Let's talk to Becky. These are good questions. Becky, what's going on there?
Hey, Dr. Drew, how are you?
I'm good. Becky, what's up?
Where do I start? I want to make this as concise as possible, but I need to thank you first and foremost. I've wanted to for a long time for helping end my marriage. I know it's a weird thing to say.
I hope
but
it was a good
back
thing.
Back in the day when you started the show.
Yeah.
What's that?
Keep going. We started the show.
You started the show with comedians watching the crazy videos, and Tom and Christina wanted you to identify if it was meth or mental illness.
Yes, yes.
And I got a real charge out of that and was laughing my ass off for a long, long time until it hit me one day, oh my God, you're describing my husband.
Oh boy.
Yes. So
was it meth or was it meth or mental illness?
It was a lot of mental illnesses, plural.
Oh, my goodness.
He was diagnosed bipolar by a psychiatrist, and then we got into couples therapy, and our LMFT saw the expressions multiple time of BPD as well as NPD, but obviously the BPD more so.
So just, let me just stop you for people. Hang on. It's a narcissistic personality disorder and borderline personality disorder. These are the cluster B types. Not fun to be around, especially with the bipolar disorder on top of that.
No.
Usually those guys do drugs. Is he doing any substances also?
Well, when we first started dating, I feel like I gave him the roadmap to how to lie to me because I told him on our first date that hard drugs were a hard pass. That's a hard deal breaker for me. And he just told me not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a major fight about a year into the relationship, he threw in my face that he'd been doing cocaine behind my back the entire time.
There you go. They do not disappoint. Disappoint people with those disorders. And by the way, they suffer as much as you do. You know what I mean? I'm sure you saw that with him. These disorders are not fun to have. They are not fun. They're not fun to be around. They're not fun to have.
No. And I was 19 when we got together. And so I was very naive.
Mm.
So I couldn't. Sorry. It's still emotional.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
We ended up getting married and I had two children.
Mm.
With him, and so I'm sorry. So now it's how do I co-parent with this person, especially now that he has a new girlfriend who just moved in, and she has no clue that he has these things because he doesn't see the psychiatrist anymore, so he doesn't take the meds, and he refutes the other diagnoses because he hated the therapist because she called a spade, and she finally saw through.
Well, let's remind ourselves that when people have those diagnoses, one of the reasons they're nearly impossible to treat is they always feel that way. What they always feel is they can't look inside for the solutions because the problems are all out there. It's you. You're the problem. So why would I, there it is. And they're very shame avoidant and stuff. And it's very, very difficult for them to look at things because they can't experience these feelings. They're sort of like Teflon with that stuff. Okay, so obviously in as structured a way as possible, correct? Here's the other thing about his psychopathology is that people find each other, you know what I mean? And there's a reason she's with him. She's going to have her own stuff. You, whatever was going on with you, you sort of recovered from and you sort of came to and you sort of made some healthy choices for yourself and you're not chronically in whatever that state was that fit with him at the time, which might have just been adolescence, right? Yeah. Adolescents all have sort of personality disorders. And so it might have been just that. Or was things nasty at home at the time?
Yeah.
So that's sort of a typical thing.
I don't even, you know, I know you have limited time. I'm not going to get into why I was with him, but I've had years of therapy. I know why I was with him. And
tell us, just so people can hear what this, how this works. Why were you with him?
Well, I was as a child. My father was absolutely horrible. I watched him physically abuse my brothers, mm-hmm. and he verbally and mentally abused me. So ultimately I ended up marrying my father,
right.
which is so right. ridiculously so, on the nose, because that's what you always hear. And of course, as a kid, as an adolescent, you go, I'm not going to turn into my parents. And yeah, it fucking happened. There it was.
Yeah.
So,
people never talk about where attraction comes from. If you have childhood trauma, it becomes the source of attraction. You become attracted to people and circumstances that are just like the original perpetrators. We don't know why that happens. It's some wiring in our head. Yeah. They must have had some evolutionary adaptation to it at one time in human evolution. It does not serve us well now, but the good news is you didn't develop a personality disorder. You just developed this kind of codependency, and so you were able to kind of recover from that and rework your attraction maps, and it no longer worked for you, and you pulled out. This girl that's with him now may have some stuff going on, right? Some real stuff. In which case, let them do their thing. You don't. It's not your responsibility.
But how do I co-parent? Especially now that she's in the picture with him. And, you know, my therapist has told me, you know, I don't have to worry about her because he is drawn to stable people, which I do understand and I do logically get.
But maybe.
It still hurts.
Maybe. Okay. Let's hope that would be the best scenario. Like that would be the best case. That'd be the best case. The other version of that is they could be a volatile explosion all the time. And they could be attracted to that in each other. And that's what you have to watch out for with the kids. I would, how old are the kids now?
My son is 14 and my daughter is just shy of 9.
Okay.
So I'm not worried so much about my son because I've been able to have discussions with him because he unfortunately has experienced firsthand just a couple times since we split what the borderline personality disorder looks like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had to have crying sessions where he's crying on my shoulder and, you know, asking questions. Now, he sees a therapist as well, thankfully.
Great.
And
great.
She's incredibly helpful.
Great. Oh my God. You're so this is a great story you're telling, right? This is how things get, how people end the cycles of abuse. This is how people get better. This is how people thrive. Treatment does work. The personality disorders, they're going to have to do their thing and hit their bottom in their own way and whatever. But your stuff, this is terrific. I mean, it's your daughter. I mean, you've got your son in the house, so you can maybe get him to kind of keep an eye out for what's going on there. And does she have her own therapist too? She does.
She doesn't. She's so young. I'd love her to see the therapist that my son and I see. We see her separately, not in the same session.
I get
it. She is wonderful, but she doesn't specialize in young children.
Yeah, I'm not worried about you. You're doing everything right, and whatever you think is the right thing to do is the right thing to do. Okay, just stand up for yourself. Set limits. Trust your instincts. That's what you got to do.
I worry about this woman considering herself mother to my children. Because
that's every co-parenting situation, right? Everybody worries about that stuff. And just stay connected to your kids. And remember, don't forget this too. They love their father, right? He has pathologies. Yeah. They love their father.
It drives me crazy.
it's okay.
It doesn't seem fair. It's like, I understand, of course they love him, but it's like to see part of the reason why I got divorced is because when I finally realized what was going on, it's like, I need to end this so I don't exemplify this to the children. And now here we are. He got together and started dating 2 days after the divorce was final.
But it's very different.
Relationship with this woman. And now they're going to see it over there.
It's very different though than them doing that, him doing that to their mother. their mother standing up for themselves, setting limits, getting out. That is a very different situation than then he just looks pathological, you know, because kids have this fantasy that families are going to stay together. It didn't work. Look, this is him now. This is what he does in relationships. They'll see it. But you do have to worry about your daughter because so she doesn't get imprinted with all this, right? So, you know, stay. She needs to be around her dad so he's not abandoning, but it needs to be very, very structured. Very, very structured. Okay?
Well, that's the only other problem is that when they're together, he spends all of his time with my son. They are into one hobby together. And he leaves her in front of the television screen. And so I feel that she, you know, when he doesn't come through for stuff, she goes, okay, whatever.
Well,
but when it's with my son, he's hurt by that. So it's like, I see that disconnect already.
But right. That's not, neither is a good thing. Neither is good. But I would keep your son on looking out for stuff. And I would talk to your husband. He's not a dumb person. So you can appeal to him and go, hey, she needs more from you. I, as a woman, can tell you that. Okay. Just be real clear with him. Don't walk on eggshells. You don't have to do that anymore.
Oh, I feel like I totally do, because if I say anything wrong, he splits, and then I'm all of a sudden the most awful mother, even though I've proven completely otherwise existence.
Right, that's the
I'm a liar. I'm a, you know, everything is just so extreme.
Right, that's the borderline stuff. So the trick is to keep him glued together and don't expose him to shame if you can avoid it. And just be, you know, matter of fact about everything. But don't walk on eggshells. All right. Thanks for the call. Very good. Good work. We're going to try something a little new here. We are going to look at some medical videos. And I'm actually very, very excited about this. Is it just medical videos today, or do we have any, is it TikToks? Is that what they are?
They look like medical videos. I think they're mostly from TikTok.
Okay.
Yeah.
This will be very interesting. We've done this a bit on social media, but I wanted to bring this in to After Dark because we should be doing this here. So here we go. What do you got? Let's see it again. We sometimes have to look at these. Okay, so what I think is going on, and what does she have on her nails? Can you freeze it with the hand up? There we go. What does she have? Are those? Can you guys see what's on those nails?
I think they're painted.
Is there something wrong with her nails?
Yeah, her fingers on the ends are like they're kind of clubbed.
I see that, and interesting you would use that word. So clubbing does happen. Her thumb there on the R left, her right, looks especially clubbed, and that can be from low circulating oxygen and from, you know, sort of the cardiac issues and things. The nails themselves don't look normal. I'm wondering if, excuse me, I'm wondering if whatever that is, whatever she's put on the nail or in the nail, is obviously causing a reaction in the nail bed. That's what she's pointing at there. And the fact that they're soft means that they're probably filled with pus. I mean, those are probably periungual abscesses that she has just turned her fingernails into just abscesses. They're at least fluid in there, inflammatory fluid. And you can get that from certain autoimmune diseases, but it doesn't look like this. So I think those are going to have to be like literally lanced, like cut open and drained. And those, whatever the hell's on her nails is going to have to come off.
Could this, is that definitely the case that it's liquid, or is that, could this be an aesthetic thing? Because have you seen how they do that with the forehead, the donut forehead thing?
Oh, can you guys, can you show me? Donut forehead?
What? Yeah, it's a, you can Google
it. Well, she's obviously thinks this is cool because she's not saying what the hell's going on here. She's saying, you know, how about this? She may be going for it, but I'm telling you that is going to be problematic. That it could all be just inflammatory. It doesn't have to be pus, but it just, that is... Donut forehead. What is that? Oh my God! What is it?
Yeah. I don't know if it's. Oh, saline injections. Saline injections to purposefully make their foreheads look like a fucking donut. This is an aesthetic like choice.
And does it stay that way for a long time?
Yeah.
How did you... Bagel head, it says. Bagel head is a type of body modification pioneered in Canada? Oh, my God.
So, I don't know. It's like, that's where my mind goes. It's like, did she fucking inject something in there to, like, make her fingers look on purpose? It's not impossible, is it?
It's possible. but it's just bagel head trend in Japan. I like the way they call it bagel head. We made it donut head. They're calling it bagel head. Wait. Go, look at that Japanese bagel head's most extreme beauty trend. The video. Can we play that video? Can we get away with that? Oh my gosh. Body modification, blah, blah, blah. Oh, here we are. Japanese bagel heads. And you said it's... Oh, my God. They're holding donuts up to their head. What is... I wonder where it came from. What she got sticking out of it? Oh, they're putting the needle in, I see. What's wrong with human beings? What is... Oh, I see. I see what they do.
Yeah, they inject it.
Oh, so they just put
it with the thumb.
Okay, so that's not permanent. They put in a bunch of fluid of some type, and then they dent it with their thumb. What is coming? Oh, it's an infusion. Oh, my God. It's a salient infusion. Because it requires a fair amount of fluid in there. I like the way they're, like, admiring it. Like, oh, I'm so beautiful with my bagel head.
It says 6 to 24 hours it's absorbed into the body.
Yeah, it gets absorbed.
How did you hear about this?
Check that out. See, he's got it on his fucking arm.
Yeah. Oh, well, interesting.
That's pretty
cool.
See?
Well, I was going to say, that beats putting beads under your arm and stuff. I'll sign off on that if you have to have something under your skin. A white guy with it. That's interesting. And they're putting them on both sides almost like horns now, too. That's interesting. Oh, a bunch of... just Japan, though. Is it just Japan? Oh, no. What's this? We're watching a procedure here. The results of... Oh my God, look, it went over the guy's eye.
Can that do like any sort of damage to your skin?
You know, I would think it could cause scarring over time, but I don't know. Maybe it would reduce the risk of wrinkles or increase the risk of, I don't know. But who thought of this? Where did it come from? To me, it's, okay, I've had enough. All right. Well, there you go. How did we get to bagel head? What were we talking about?
That girl's fingertips. I was wondering if
fingertips.
That could have been.
Yeah. Could have been, I guess. I you know, you guys, as always, humans never cease to amaze me. I'm glad I spent time at your mom's house. I learned about, our cool guy mouths and TikTok eyes. And now we've got, what do we call this?
Now we got donut heads.
Donut heads. Donut yeah. heads. That's what we'll call it. Give me another one. Okay. Me and my weird medical mystery. Every time I stand up, I fall down. Well, that's POTS syndrome. Is that it? Is that the end of the video?
Yeah.
Oh, she puts her hands up. Is that when well, that makes sense. Do you see her fall?
Let's see.
No, which is why I'm going to say pretty sure this is Cap, right?
Sus?
This is Cap. Yeah, this is Cap. A little this sus to me.
On TikTok? Fuck out of here.
All right, another video. Every time I kiss a new guy, I get a sore throat and allergic to men. No, but I've heard of it. Oh, that's a woman? Yes, the girl.
Yeah.
Is there pronouns anywhere? And was she making a oral sex move there? Was that part of what her little movement thing was? Like, is that part of what I've heard of people giving oral sex to men and getting these sore throats? See, there isn't that a oral sex move there?
I think it's just a goofy TikTok dance.
All right, fair enough. And it's not an allergy when people get this. I'm not sure what it is. I've heard of it before. I've heard it from kissing. I've heard it from oral sex. I don't know if it's the body fighting off infection. And I've seen some people actually get these really like significant sore throats afterwards where they have to take antibiotics. I don't know. I do know it happens. I don't know why it happens. I don't know.
I have a potential hypothesis.
All right, I'm ready.
She's gay, right? That's what that is. She's gay.
She's allergic. She doesn't like men.
She's a lesbian.
So every time she kisses a guy, she has a reaction.
That's what that is.
You know, not everything is in the head, my friend. I know you know, yes, everything is. I'm not sure about that. It's an interesting idea. I do, as you know, I do put a lot of emphasis on the brain and its, you know, its effect on the body. I'm with you on that. But I've heard of this from people that are really super straight, for sure. So I
just fucking
all right, good. I never know with you, dude. I know. And if I didn't take you seriously, I don't know.
Yeah, nobody does. No one knows when it's serious.
No, it's good. I'm You're sorry. Good at it. It's sus. All right. What
oh,
else
shit,
you got?
That was good.
Thank you. Yeah, I was taught by the best.
Give me another one.
Then I'm going to go to some calls. Oh, no. Well, that could be a lot of stuff. So she has a fine tremor in both hands. When she holds, you know, that kind of shakiness is, drugs, medication, actually not even drugs, medication, and or familial tremor, benign familial tremor, but do see a neurologist. These are important things to get evaluated.
We've got someone in the studio as something like that.
Can they bring it in here for me?
Old Gamba hands.
Who's that?
Yeah, we could bring him in.
Who is that?
Gamba. He's an editor.
Oh yeah. But show me.
Cool.
Oh, you know, but yeah, I have to ask him questions he may not want to answer.
No, he's working from home now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So I'd have to ask about medication, things like that. So, but one of these days, let's do that. Let's, Jeremy, what's going on?
What's going on, Dr. Drew?
Not much, buddy. What do you got?
My name's Jeremy from Southwest Virginia. Just had a quick question. I've Googled this many occasions and I cannot find the answer.
All right.
Whenever I eat, you're not. Ever, but occasionally when I eat sweet things, bitter things, or sour things, sometimes when I drink the right beer, I get this acute pain underneath my ear behind my jawbone. Mm. Sometimes it's almost like a cramping, but it's not a cramp.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm not the person in my circle who's experienced that. What is that?
What I bet that is, you know, your parotid gland extends all the way to your ear. And I bet that is a contraction of your parotid, your salivary glands, right? So you eat something sour, your glands, they go, that's that feeling we get when we eat something sour, the glands constrict. And it's possible. Do you ever get any swelling back there?
Not that I've ever noticed.
So I would worry that there were maybe could be a stone or some local inflammation or something of the parotid gland. You to get that evaluated, not that you have to, but you'd see an ear, nose, and throat doctor, or a head and neck surgeon really is what you'd see, because they deal with disorders of the parotid. And it's, you know, probably nothing, but it's congratulations, you have super active salivary glands. Is that true, or maybe underactive? Could be either way.
All right.
Sorry,
it wasn't about.
Nah, it's good. No white, brown, or anything. I'm tired of that stuff. Let's see. Shelby. Oh, let's talk to Shelby. Oh, my. Shelby, what's going on?
Not a whole lot.
You there?
Just wanted to.
Okay.
Just wanted to ask you a quick question about. Having ED after I found out my wife was cheating on me.
Ouch. Are you at work or something? We have to kind of whisper here.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to a good spot here.
All right. I can always tell when people are trying to make sure no one hears the conversation.
So, no, you're good.
All right. So,
I caught her back in.
Sorry. What was the situation? It's awful.
Caught her at the end of June, probably. Started seeing someone relatively quickly. I noticed my desire to, like, watch porn just went to zero, which I did super frequently.
Mm.
And if I tried it, like, nothing with guy on girl, it was just, like, limp dick. Like, not getting hard. There's no way. Like, had to watch either solo stuff or, like, girl on girl shit.
Yeah.
So like the first time I hooked up with my,
go ahead.
New chick, like problems, no problems. And then all of a sudden I just start getting like intrusive thoughts while we're doing it.
Of course.
And it's just like right to limp. You know what I mean?
Yes, of course. So you've been traumatized. Did you walk in on something? Was it that kind of trauma?
No, I just had like a really like aching suspicion. And then I looked at her phone one morning and it was just all there. You know what I mean? Pictures, the whole fucking thing.
Yeah. So you had to see all that. I am so sorry. And then you got out of that relationship very quickly, or?
Yeah. Cause I was pretty unhappy for years. Mm. We've been together since we were 19.
Oh
like
my
12
yeah.
years. Well, I'm like 31 now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It just really fucked with me.
Yeah, and why not, right? Why? How could it not? And I, you know, if I were you, you can kind of go about this two ways. One is you can maybe get some erectile dysfunction pills and sort of push through.
I've tried that. It does work.
Yeah, but you can kind of push through and sort of get going, get in relationships, see if you can sort of calm yourself down and if you can kind of tolerate being close again and feeling vulnerable and not having all these crazy thoughts come in. But if you can't, it really is important to get some treatment here. And things like EMDR, you know, to sort of unwire the trauma can really be helpful. But even just sitting and talking with somebody would have kind of dramatic effects, I would think. And you know, one of the things you want to know is, you know, part of the stuff you have to work on is, you know, what did I miss? Why did I let that happen? How can I protect myself in the future? And then what do I want? What do I look for in a person to reduce the risk that that kind of thing would happen again? And that having somebody in your corner, it's sort of, we always describe therapy. It's almost like a, you know, a fighter that goes into the corner and then goes back out to fight. Having that coach in the corner can really be helpful for you.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm currently in therapy, but
okay.
She's not like the best one, I feel like. I feel like she agrees, like she greenlights all of my like bad ideas sometimes.
Like what can name it? Like what? Like what
bad? I don't know why.
Give me an example of that. What's a bad idea?
Well, personally, probably falling for this chick so fast. You know what I mean? She's like, oh, it's fine. If you know, you know. And I'm like, oh, I've been with her for like a month.
And maybe that's the whole problem.
Like, 2 weeks after, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe falling into something is sort of where you lose the control and stuff again. So I don't know. You may be right. Have you discussed all this with her? Do you feel comfortable talking about it?
With my therapist or the therapist? Yeah, like also she told me she's leaving the place that I see her at. Like she got a different therapy job. So like our last session, she was just being super blunt with everything, which I liked, which was like for the first time I always felt like she's like withholding information from me. But she was just like XYZ, this is what you need to do, and was like kind of giving me advice, which she'd never done before.
I'm not a huge fan of therapists giving advice, by the way. That's not why you go to therapy. I mean, they can tell you sort of how to, but the advice, I don't know. You have to make your own decisions. Therapists don't make decisions for you. But I get a new therapist, maybe some EMDR. I don't know. How does the chick respond to all this, by the way, the new one?
She is super open, which is nice.
Good.
She's like, I know it's not me.
Okay,
like,
good.
Going through a lot of shit, but I feel like that's a bag of worms in itself because I know that she's been with a lot of people, which semi bugs me sometimes. Then, but I'm like trying to not let it bug me.
She's legitimately super cool.
You know what I mean?
Still getting all the way in with somebody so quickly. Maybe that's just your body and your brain telling you you're not ready. You know what I mean? Just think about it that way. It's a lot, man. It's a lot. I'm sorry. Oof-wee. Oh my gosh. You guys will like this. You're going to like this. And then we'll go back to some more videos. We have some voicemails, messages too. This is Gabby. Hi, Gabby. What's going on?
What's up, Dr. Drew? How are you?
Well, I'm good. What do you got on your mind?
So I'm writing a book right now, and I thought you'd be the best person to ask, but what's the farthest you can amateurly dissect a human body before certain death, no anesthesia?
I mean, how do you get a human body to cooperate with surgery, right? If there's no anesthesia?
Very willing participant. Maybe restraints, but that's not in my notes right now.
Okay, so restraints, you're just stabbing someone essentially. So this sort of torture, it would be torture. It's hard to say, right? If you cut an artery and you don't know how to repair it, and you can get into that very quickly in any limb or in any body cavity. So very quickly, bleeding to death is that just can happen anywhere you go. That could happen very, very quickly. Probably all you could get away with without getting into trouble fast would be just sort of opening the abdominal cavity. You could do that. But everything else, it seems to me, you would get into trouble very, very quickly. And then eventually, not within minutes potentially, there will be shock, and then shock will lead to death. And then in terms of how much, you know, one of the things about that you should know that my plastic surgeon friends always tell me, people always want to have all these plastic surgeries done. I want to get the breast, and then I want to do the butt implant, and then do the... It turns out if you operate a lot on, if you do a lot of tissue damage on people, they'll just die. They just die, and we don't even know why. They just, the body can only tolerate so much tissue damage, and it's not as much as you think, and just dead all of a sudden. So, and maybe it's sort of shock, maybe it's some cardiac arrhythmia, maybe it's some circulating, arrhythmogenic thing that affects the heart. It's hard to say. Maybe it's a clotting phenomenon, but it's the effects that result in death are very protean when you start doing a lot of tissue damage. Obviously, we can operate in a controlled environment when you control bleeding, control infection, and you can, you know, limit the tissue damage to a certain extent. People can tolerate a fair bit. I mean, we can replace an aorta. I mean, we can do that. It's very tough for bodies to get through that. And afterwards, a lot of supportive care is necessary to get people not to die. Do you got any more videos for me? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I got a couple more. Right. Why did you think we would like that call?
Yeah. Also, I really hope we just assisted with only a book.
Right. Like, maybe tracing else. That call.
You guys like macabre, but it went a little more macabre than I expected.
So it's pretty macabre.
So even you guys, I understand, won't take that kind of thing. Well, you know, let's do voice messages before we go on to more videos. Let's do some, how about a substance and addiction voicemail?
You got it.
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on, Drew and the other Booth boys? My name's Corey. I had a question about SSRIs, as I hear you, Drew, bring that up a lot. I think that the way you talk about how it kills sex drive, I think that's the cause of my last two relationships going down in flames. Because, see, I have no problem beating my meat, you know. The phone's right there, you know, smoke some weed. I don't take the Benadryl or nothing, but I still have no problem beating the meat, but I didn't want to fuck. You know, I had really, you know, great looking significant others, but I just did not want to fuck. When I stopped taking the medication, yeah, definitely still didn't want to fuck. So I don't know what's going on because the doctor says don't stop taking the medication.
Uh-oh.
So what do I do? Do you have any recommendations of which SSRIs I should take that might help if they seem to be working? Like, the rest of my life seems great. Any ideas on what to transition to? Appreciate it, guys. Stay high and tight, and you better come up today.
It's actually a really serious question, and the fact that you continue to have changes in your libido after you come off the SSRI, there's a whole world of persistent sexual desire problems and persistent sexual dysfunction from antidepressant medication. I actually did a whole podcast on this. There are communities of people that are trying to raise awareness about the fact that not only can you have sexual dysfunction of any type? You can have erectile dysfunction, desire dysfunction. Like you're saying, you kind of can masturbate, but you can't have really interest in sexuality. That is the medication. And some people have that persistently even after they come off the medication indefinitely. And it's there's various theories about it. One theory is it's sort of a neuropathic kind of process. But be that as it may, it's kind of serious. The one that's the least likely to cause it is Lexapro. Typically, you don't want to, if you're having this, the psychiatrist should get you first of all, should see a psychiatrist and not a primary care doctor, and they should get you off SSRIs entirely. So it's actually a bigger deal than you might imagine.
I have a question about this, Drew.
Yeah.
So how much do you think that they are trying to advance medicine in terms of like pharmacy options, like in terms of medication you can take, or how much are they just trying to like, well, we have Lexapro now, so let's push that and just deal with the side effects? Are they trying to develop things without these side effects?
From the moment, this is how pharmaceutical research works. From the moment you pull a molecule off the shelf and identify it, you have 10 years to bring it to market and profit, and then you lose the patent. 10 years from the moment it comes off the shelf. On average, it takes 5 years and over $1 billion to bring a new drug to market. So they are left with 5 years to make their profit. Then it goes generic and then it's pennies. So they only have 5 years with these drugs. So that's the only time they push them is during those years when they can make profit. And when there are new things that seem to have new benefits and seem to be better than previous things, doctors use them, even though they get a little more costly. But they have to recoup around somewhere between $800 million and $1.5 billion, depending on the drug. That's why the pharmaceutical industry is such a mess, because it costs so much money to do the phase three trials and get things through the FDA. Now, the easiest thing to do is to take a drug you already have and change it a little bit and retest it for, you could do that in a couple of years. You know, you can get it through the FDA very quickly. And that's why there's a million different Pepcid, Xanax, Tagamets. That's why there's a million different Protonix, Prilosex, Nexium, because they're called Me Too drugs. That's the most profitable way, because then you have 7 or 8 years to make your profits back. And usually it doesn't cost as much to get it to market. So that's why that happens.
And then a follow-up question on that. Yeah. So is there any kind of like conflict of interest or any law or policy that would prevent like one company that, they say they make a drug and it has these side effects, can they then make drugs that address those side effects, or is that like a conflict of interest?
That's an interesting question. They generally don't, in my experience. I don't know why. Usually what happens is a company comes up with a medication that doesn't have the side effects rather than something to treat the side effects. And usually what ends up happening is the doctors are using off-label medication to treat the side effects. I guess it's probably not profitable to treat side. There's not enough people with side effects to make a profit. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Does that make sense? I didn't imagine that. I mean, largely why I got off medication was the side effects. And then it was like trying to balance out the side effects with more drugs, and it just seemed like a never-ending kind of
spiral. But most of the more drugs were doctors doing things off-label. That's not FDA approved or anything.
Gotcha.
And that drug companies didn't bring to market. We just know from research and clinical practice that you can use these things off label. All right. I'd like a video, please. And then I want a substance video. I want a substance email or a voicemail after that.
Does anyone else have a weird stomach pulse?
Oh, that's the aorta. That's her aorta.
It doesn't hurt, but I hate it. Discuss often, please.
That's her aorta.
I hate the human body.
That's hysterical. That's really funny. That's because she's, you know, very, very, has a very thin body wall there. And that's her aorta pulsating right through her skin. She's tiny. And that's okay. Doesn't necessarily mean anything. We sometimes worry about that when we see that clinically. We always have to kind of feel around the aorta, kind of make sure it's not an aneurysm there. But it, somebody that age, it's like unheard of. You guys like that? Is that appealing? Look how she's so freaked out.
I mean, that happens to me sometimes.
Ah, see? It's not uncommon. It really isn't. But it's so funny that people get freaked out by their bodies, every little thing.
I have a pulsing question, actually.
Uh-oh.
Sometimes it's a... not what you... Yeah. It's sometimes when... Actually, pretty frequently when I wake up, if my mouth is open, I will hear like a tick, you know? Like it sounds like I can hear my heartbeat.
A clicking.
Yes, and that's like frequent.
Is it a single click or is it click,
it's,
click, click?
It's a pattern, yeah, or a rhythm, yeah.
I don't know.
No,
you can get clicking in the ear. Is it in the ear or is it in your throat?
It's definitely in my mouth because I'll close my mouth and I won't hear it. I'm like, what the fuck? And then there's been times I've gone to the like mirror and like looked, you know, and I'll open my mouth and it's like clear because now it's like an echo.
You could see it.
No. I'm clear that the sound is more clear because I'm in like the bathroom, so it's echoing.
It's continues.
Yes.
Does your palate move at all?
No, I don't see anything moving. I don't see because anything moving
I would,
the rhythm. So
I would be more convinced that I would be more concerned that it's nothing to do with your heartbeat, but maybe some sort of spasm of the palate. Because you can get fluttering of the palate can cause clicking and funny movements and things. And so really look at the back of the throat next time that next time you get that.
I guess I thought that it had something to do with the heart, because that also happens after sex. If I'll notice that, like, you know, I'm obviously, like, heart rate's up.
Yeah.
And if I can't explain how I figured it out, but it's like if my mouth is open, I just hear it. And it's like, if it's like, why
can somebody else hear it?
Huh?
Can somebody standing next to you hear it?
Yeah. I asked.
It's got to be your palate. It's got to be something in the back of the palate there.
Huh.
Yeah. Okay. No,
like, concern there. Just
not really. Concern. I mean, not cardiac concern.
Okay.
Okay. But it's intriguing. Intriguing.
Yeah, definitely weird as hell. That sounds like there's a fucking clock inside of me.
How long you had that for?
Fucking
forever.
Yeah.
So good. So the forever part is reassuring, right? Because it means if it were something, it would declare itself, right? It would turn into something else. It would show itself.
Well, I guess I shouldn't say forever. I mean, it's been like, you know, I don't know, 5 years or something. But okay. It feels like it's been a long time. I just haven't ever. It definitely hasn't done anything.
Yeah. Right.
No.
I will just tell you the one weird case I saw of palatal fluttering. There's actually something called butterfly palate. Let's look at butterfly palate. See if we can get a video of that.
You can see that, right? I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you can see it.
Yeah. My mouth does not look
but
like
I wonder
that.
If this is some form of that, something like that. Is that it? No, it's a butterfly pattern on the palate. We're not going to get it. They're giving color palates instead of the mouth or the pharyngeal palate. Oh yeah, and then now they're looking at patterns on the mucosa. All right, forget it. We're never going to see it anyway. You can kind of flutter like that. Well, you and I'll look it up later. All right, give me one more voice message with a little substance attached to it. How about that?
And guests, my name is Dalton. I'm coming at you from Missouri. I was curious if you could pull up the ingredients in Zen nicotine pouches and go over them and see if you think they're a good substitute for, say, cigarettes or chewing tobacco. Thank you. Love the show. Bye.
I'm
pretty sure you have one under the table, a pack of Zens.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Well, tell me why. Who's using them?
I'm not sure.
Was
I
just preparation
Danny.
I just saw them there. Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah, Danny, I guess.
Wow. Well, I generally...
That little pack? Yeah, that.
There we are.
So you have that.
There they are. Oh, my God. What did he put on here? Like nicotine gum or something? The print is literally so small. It's actually not on here. So I'm guessing it's just nicotine, right? Exactly how what the source is. Look, I'm generally a big fan of nicotine replacement of all types. In fact, I always thought the pouch ingredients, that people should even think about using if they have a really serious weight problem, think about nicotine for weight control even. I am a nicotine fan. I don't think nicotine hurts anything. I think the obsession people have with, don't do nicotine. No, tobacco hurts you. Tobacco harms you, both chewing and smoking. That's how you get cancer. That's how you get lung disease. That's how you get heart disease. Anything other than tobacco as a source of nicotine, I can't think of one that is a problem that gets anywhere near the dangers of tobacco. Tobacco happens to have nicotine within it. That's what hooks you on the tobacco, but the nicotine is not the problem. Yes, nicotine can increase anxiety. Nicotine is addictive. So what? It causes dependency, not really addiction. And if you start using these things before the age of 15, you tend to need nicotine replacement the rest of your life, believe it or not, because people just can't tolerate being off at something about nicotinic receptors early in life that they become just geared up in such a way that we just can't tolerate being without nicotine. Let's see. What does it say there? Contains white powdered nicotine, other ingredients, additives, filter, stabilizers. We don't even know what that is. It's just all additives and sweeteners and things like that. I don't, you know. I'm assuming that's been properly tested.
Drew, I've had two different dentists tell me that vaping is worse for me than smoking.
For the teeth?
They didn't really specify. They just said it's worse for me.
Absolutely, categorically not. I don't can't comment on the teeth. If they know something about the teeth, I don't know. I'd be very interested. But there is a panic about vaping. Vaping is actually the best way we know to get people off cigarettes. The most efficacious. Every study, it's always the most effective. Should you continue vaping? No, I'd rather you not. It's got a bunch of metals and products. There is some good data that the government put together that showed over long periods of time, maybe precancerous stuff, maybe there's some cancer potential there. Nothing like tobacco. Nothing. Not even close. Not good for you. Not as bad as tobacco. Nicotine, not great for you. I wouldn't want you to be addicted to it, but if it helps you stay away from tobacco, I'm all in. Cause rhythm disturbances, cause anxiety, cause sleeplessness, that kind of stuff. Not super healthy, but not a problem. Not dangerous. Not medically relevant. And people are in this weird panic about nicotine, and it drives me a little nuts. So thank you all for being here. Again, drdrewfdark@gmail.com, 818-253-1693. I want to do more voicemails. I guess I'm going to skip the substance one. Do you want to do it really quickly before I go?
The voicemail?
Yeah, the substance voicemail. Do you
have
one?
Yeah, that was one of them. I'll do another one if you want.
Oh, that was it, the nicotine one?
Yeah.
All right, let's let it go then. Okay. Then I did what I said I was going to do. We'll save more for next time. Appreciate y'all being here. We will see you next time.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation in the Dr. Drew After Dark podcast or interaction on the DrDrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine.